So you moved on from reproductive services?
Yes. I moved on because Helpline was taken over by the Community Service Council, became full-time, and became much more organized.
And Helpline was?
It's a 24-hour crisis telephone line, suicide prevention, and information and referral.
We have to give our good friend David Bernstein credit here,
absolutely,
don't we?
Yes, at Community Service Council.
And David Bernstein's interview is on voicesofoklahoma.com. He actually went to California, viewed how this worked, brought it back, and set it up and introduced it to Tulsa.
Right. It's a great resource.
There are many angels in our community who don't get a lot of credit.
Right.
You said you were there.
I worked there as casework supervisor, and I developed the resource guide, which at that time was not a computer, but was actually a card file. I developed the taxonomy under which everything was arranged and used that same taxonomy to edit the blue book of social services in Tulsa two different times.
Did you ever say to yourself, I got a PhD in English and this is what I'm doing?
Yes, but so many things tied in. I helped with educating the volunteers there in things like active listening and so on. I would use all of my knowledge from whatever source.
Then let's move on from Helpline to what next?
The next thing was Call Rape, which was the rape crisis agency here in town. I had some friends who were on the board there and who had helped develop it. They were getting pretty desperate because things were falling apart. Just a small number of people remained as the volunteers, and a small number remained as board members. So my friends were determined that they were going to get me to be the executive director, and then everything would be saved. So they promised each other that they would stay on the board until Gloria came in, and then they could feel free to resign, which they did. But they're still my friends today.
I believe the, should we call it, rape crisis movement begins in the 70s.
I would say in the 60s and 70s.
And this was all kind of becoming more public and breaking the silence of rape. We were talking about it in hushed tones, but it was time to be more vocal about it.
Yes, and it was definitely an expression of feminism, that the feminists realized what was going on with each other, what things we were suffering in private, such as rape, domestic violence, and so many things that women had been subject to for years and years and hundreds of years. So they set out, definitely a grassroots thing. They would start an organization. They would be the workers. They would be the board members. They would be the fundraisers. They would put in all their own money to make it happen. It's amazing across the country how what's called the rape crisis movement and the domestic violence movement have proceeded and now are totally mainstream. Laws have been changed. Police have been educated. Judges have been educated and so forth. But a very different story from when we began.
It was in 1974, the federal government funded Pittsburgh Action Against Rape. This was the first time that the federal government provided financial aid to a rape center. It also began to treat, in this case, mostly women as victims, and they were victims. Wasn't there the thought may continue today, well, what was she wearing?
Yes, of
course.
What
did she say?
Right.
Was it consensual?
Yes.
All those questions had to be thrown out immediately to find out whether this was a legitimate rape or not.
And how about this one? Was she married to the man? Like a married woman saying, my husband raped me. Well, that wasn't even a concern.
Say, well, he was
married. You signed up for that when you got married. It was amazing. There was no definition of marital rape. Didn't exist.
And we've come a long way
in
that.
A long way.
Although, I will say, I saw a video the other day, and I think it actually comes out of the world of sports. Snippets of about 7-8 men who said, we need to speak up, we need to defend, we need to protect, we need to respect. Together, we can change the culture. So here we are in 2017. We're still trying to change the culture.
Right.
That's mm-hmm. being taught today. Mm-hmm. Here we started talking about it in mid-70s, and we're still having to deal with it.
I know. There was a great film that Call Rape owned that I would trot around with and show. It was a wonderful spokesperson, and he used a lot of material that was done on college campuses as his factual basis. It ends with, it's mostly men who are raping, and we're the ones who are going to have to stop it. It was a man talking to men. But then you just open the newspaper or you turn on your TV, and here's some sports star who thinks he's entitled to having sex with anybody who is lucky enough to go out with him. I mean, just this attitude of power and control. It's shocking that it's still going on.
And changes to the point where the victim had to have physically resisted the attacker.
Yes, and how do you prove that?
Right.
And the majority of rapes are really what you call date rape or acquaintance rape. That is the majority of rapes. Those didn't even used to get on the radar. If you weren't walking along and have somebody jump out of an alley or out of the bushes, don't even talk about it. Don't even call that rape. But so many women were and still are, especially in the college age group and setting, victims of sexual assault.
And legislation also protected women with disabilities who would not have the strength to fight off an attacker.
Yes.
The rape shield laws also came into effect, where a woman's background, her sexual life, did not have anything to do with the lead up to that rape.
Right. But that was a choice thing for the attorney on the defendant's side to look up that she had had a lover or whatever, and that was then just used against her.
You were quoted nationally, too. There was a book, Rape on the Public Agenda, Feminism and the Politics of Sexual Assault.
Mm-hmm.
And I only bring it up because when I was looking for your name, you were quoted in the book.
Well, that book came out then later. There's a book on rape that was done by, I think, Susan Brown Miller, which was before this one. And that's a really powerful one. That one lined it up as it was used during wars and so on throughout the centuries and really put it all together in one book, this whole idea of rape. I don't know what the subtitle of that book was.
You know, this is a comment on the community of mm-hmm. Tulsa. I had been in town several years. The Call Rape representative came to visit me, mm-hmm. and they were doing a fund drive. So we raised thousands and thousands mm-hmm. of dollars on successive years, as a matter mm-hmm. of fact. And I only mention that because the community was beginning to understand it,
yes.
and they were contributing, and they knew what Call Rape was about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a comment on the community. They wanted to help.
Yes.
I don't know, at that time it was $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 mm-hmm. we raised mm-hmm. for Call Rape.
Excellent. I'm sure that allowed it to keep going because it was not a United Way agency until I brought it into the United Way. That gives it a certain cachet as far as the community insisting that this is a necessary service.
Right.
Today it is part of Domestic Violence Intervention Service. It no longer exists as a separate agency. It was merged after I left.